A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on October 10, 2004, for the Center for Religion and Life Weekend, entitled Good Religion, Passionate and Intelligent. The text was Acts 17:16 through 28, and a reading from Duncan Littlefair. Copyright Grand Valley State University.
It is a pleasure to sit here once again in your midst, although in getting ready for this moment, I realize why I retired. We've had a great weekend. Friday night was a party at Duba's Restaurants, where else? And it was a wonderful celebrative remembering, telling Duncan stories. And yesterday, Dr. Gary Dorian from Kalamazoo College gave two fine lectures. The one about the Chicago School, which had a shaping influence on Duncan, and then one addressing more the contemporary situation in a manner in which Duncan would have been proud. And now, of course, this morning and the session following, when we'll continue to talk about the legacy, the Littlefair legacy. This has been a weekend sponsored by the Center for Religion and Life, which is cannot really be separated from this community of faith, and the question might be raised, why are you doing this? And I thought perhaps I ought to begin by saying that we are doing it because we want to keep alive the voice and the spirit of Duncan Littlefair, who made such a great impact on this whole area, particularly the Fountain Street Church, a community that he shaped and formed over some six decades, being a part of it as pastor and pastor emeritus, but the Grand Rapids area and far beyond. But more lately, becoming a shaping influence in this community through an intimate friendship that developed between us, he becoming for me, as one born out of due time, a mentor in my elderdom, a time when perhaps I should have had it all figured out, but continued to find new horizons opened, particularly by the scintillating mind and passion of Duncan Littlefair. If he were here on this weekend, he would say, "What's all the fuss?" Dr. Lubbers mentioned that at his party on Friday evening. What is this all about? I never knew anyone quite like Duncan who had an unusual giftedness, brilliance, charisma, force of personality, who was at the same time so unconcerned about self-promotion and would not at all have been happy to be the center of this kind of celebrative weekend, except that down deep, I think, he knew that while he never had it within himself to promote himself or in any way to perpetuate that which he had shaped and created, nonetheless, he was not unaware of the value of it. And from time to time, I had conversations with him about finding some way to keep that voice and that spirit alive. And he was open to that. And I think he would be pleased that there are those of us who are concerned to perpetuate the power and the influence of the religious embodiment that he represented in our midst. And we do it here simply because he had come here so often to worship and loved this place, and in many ways cast his mantle upon me, and then was present with us when we brought Ian here for the first time. And he was fascinated by Ian and so hopeful and confident for the future of this place with the leadership of Ian. And one of the goals that we have in a weekend like this, the lectures yesterday by Dr. Dorian being what we touted as the first annual Little Fair Lectures, what I hope, and some with me hope, will come out of this is an annual lectureship, an annual Little Fair Lectureship that will keep alive that vision and that voice and that spirit of Duncan Little Fair. Some endowed lectureship that annually can bring an outstanding scholar on the cutting edge of religious thought and study into the West Michigan area, that we might be reminded every fall or whenever it would occur that we have had in our midst one of the greatest religious thinkers and leaders of his generation. It is my hope that such a thing will be established, perhaps with an endowment at Grand Valley State University, and then a directorship from Grand Valley and from Fountain Street Church, where Duncan labored all those years, and from Christ Community. I've met with Dr. Lubbers, who will be with us in the hour following, and former mayor of Grand Rapids, John Logie, from Fountain Street Church. And we are working on this, and we do hope to bring it into reality. But why do you say, again, why all the fuss? What's it all about? And I want to simply say that we have had a gift in our midst which ought not to be forgotten, ought not ever to be taken for granted. And because we have experienced this gift and can relate to the positive value, the impact of that life, I think that it is incumbent upon us to do what we can in order to keep that spirit alive. Duncan Little Fair was for decades known as the voice of the liberal in Western Michigan, a bastion of conservative evangelical orthodoxy. He was not unaware of the fact that the whole conservative community saw him as a threat, suspected him, and called him by the nickname Dr. Little Faith. He would simply smile about that. But the very fact that everyone seemed to be aware of him and threatened by him and would denigrate him with such a name as Dr. Little Faith was indicative of the fact that in this area he was having an impact far beyond the community in which he was carrying on his ministry. And to have met this man and to come to know him was to come to experience religion in all of its fullness, in all of its beauty, in all of its positive power. To me, it is a most remarkable fact of my life, a life that has been given wholly over to engagement with the religious quest and the religious task. One who was warped from the womb to be religious. One who was educated for religious ministry and leadership. One who has done it seriously and responsibly with all of my being. It is most remarkable to me that I should have come in the latter decade of my life to encounter one who embodied religion that caused me to be born again. One who had been engaged positively and I think fruitfully in the religious quest and the religious life. But I suppose, to be honest, one for whom religion had also been task and burden, to come to encounter one who embodied a religion that was the very poetry of life, that brought forth the deep inner resources of life, one who lived a religious life that enabled him to be fully human and to bring the aroma of humaneness to all of those that he met. When I met Duncan Littlefair, my life was changed. It was good religion. It was religion that drew from the depths of reality, bringing to expression in a magnificent manner the highest possibility of being human. The toast at Duba's is famous now, lifting our glasses around that table to the wonder, the miracle, the glory, and the joy of life. And that was more than a toast. For Duncan, it was a way of life. And to be in his presence and to come to know him in intimate friendship was to be transformed and to be changed. I was conscious of it happening. I was conscious of the consciousness with which I began to live humanly when I came to the encounter with this man. It's good religion. Good religion is passionate. So much of the religious story, so much of the Christian tradition story of which we have been a part, is the story of a very serious and magnificent religious vision. The whole biblical story, born in Israel, and coming to full expression in the event of Jesus Christ and the whole grand tradition of the church. All of that has been a passionate human adventure and experience. But that whole tradition came to its expression in a world, in a time, in an age, before the modern period, with the explosion of knowledge and our scientific understanding of the whole cosmic reality. So what we have inherited, what has shaped us, our prayers, our liturgies, our hymns, our sacraments, our manner of devotion, all of that that has been poured into us, that in which we have been nurtured, all of that is reflective of a conception of reality, of a world that is dissolved by the onslaught of modern knowledge. And so we live a bifurcated existence. And if we are aware, if we're conscious, there is a dissonance between the practice, the observance of our religion through the forms and the structures that have been given to us, and the story as it's told in this book, and the way we live our lives the rest of the day, the week, with all of the knowledge that we have of this unfolding cosmic drama. And what has happened in the tradition of the church is that there have been those who have tried to take seriously the eruption of human knowledge and make an adjustment between that and this. And what happens so often is that before the onslaught of this eruption of knowledge that is ours in our world today, the religious faith, the belief system, etc., has been reduced and reduced and reduced. Take away this, take away that, give up miracles, give up prayer, give up whatever, bring it down as far as you can, but hold on to this somehow or other out of tradition or fear or superstition, but live here in a modern world with all of the knowledge that is cascading down upon us. The dissonance doesn't go away, but in the liberal movement, in reducing the number of beliefs or what one really has to hold on to, trying to somehow or other dissolve that dissonance, what has often resulted is an anemic religious experience. Believing a little less, believing a little less passionately, giving it a passing glance, as it were, but knowing that, as a matter of fact, the real world is a world that is being opened up to us by the continuing research and probing of the scientists and all of the human disciplines. That wasn't true of Duncan. Duncan had a robust religious experience. As I said in his memorial service, the man was drunk with God. He was intoxicated with the holy and the sacred. To be in his presence was to be in the presence of a human being that was filled with religious awe and wonder. It was shocking to me. I, who had been prejudiced with the rest of Western Michigan, to think of this humanist, this naturalist, as one who must be religiously barren, to find one who is so passionately religious in the spiritual quest, for whom the toast to the wonder, glory, miracle, and joy of life was the center and core and creed of his life. It was contagious to see him stand in awe of a flower, of a blade of grass, of a leaf turned golden in autumn. To see the joy in his countenance as he sat in his old wooden rocker by a crackling fire on a dreary, gloomy day, delighting in the evolving clouds. One who looked you in the eye with penetrating eyes and loved conversation, and at our Dubas table would insist on one conversation with everybody at full attention at all times. This was a human being that was the very embodiment of everything that is divine. And I stood amazed. And for me, that heavy obligation of religion, that burdensome aspect of religion, that controlling, threatening, condemning dimension of religion, that religious tradition which had weighed heavily upon me, which I had been working at all of my life to unlayer, suddenly fell away before the beauty of a human being that was the very incarnation of God. There was no sacrifice of the mind or the intelligence. There was the eager and ready exploration of every facet of human knowledge, the probing of the depths of every question, the welcoming of every new piece of data, the delight in every favorite theory and canon of science that got overthrown by more exploration and further experimentation and the revelation of new data. The mind was fully free to soar into all of the realms of human understanding. Never a threat. Always an increase in wonder and awe. Because religion, for Duncan, was not some creedal formulation, not some set of propositions, not some truths deduced from this Bible storybook. Religion for Duncan was not some canon law of an institutional church or the favorite formulations of an ancient tradition. For as my good friend Lester always was fully aware, knowing it in Duncan, and to his distress seeing it happen in me, finally, there is no authority beyond the authority that arises from within one, fully cognizant of the totality of the possibility of human understanding, and then reveling in life, thus enriched and enlarged. Because religion is not some kind of abject bowing before some supernatural deity out there. But indeed, as he said, the whole cosmic process coming to expression in the likes of us is the emanation of God from the creative center, that ultimate mystery of being. And whatever we are, I love the quote read a moment ago. Can't you hear Duncan preaching it? It's typical preacher's talk. It's not carefully honed rhetoric. It's not carefully philosophically punctuated. It's the kind of pulpit talk that where the preacher begins to foam at the mouth because there is something within him that will come to expression. We are the intrusions, we are the extrusions. Well, are we intrusions or extrusions? One pushes in, the other pushes out. We are illustrations, we are examples, we are God. For God's sake, we are God. It's amazing. There isn't anything beyond, you see. But the beyond has come to expression in the concrete, the infinite in the finite. And we, the finite concretization of that infinite mystery, have that longing again for the mystery. It's the longing to go home. And so in our very naturalness, we're the ultimate expression of that which is sacred and holy, in that one reality of which we are a part, in that one tapestry into which our existence is woven. We are the consciousness, the voice, the storytellers of that unfolding of God in the one reality. passionate, intelligent. Duncan loved Paul. Of course, he had no time for Paul's eschatology and the end of the world. He had no time for Paul's seeing Jesus as the atoning sacrifice for the sin of the world. That he would say, well, you know, Paul couldn't help himself. Look where he was coming from. But he loved Paul because Paul had passion. He loved Paul. Can't you see Duncan, just like Paul, going right into the Areopagus in Athens, right to the heart of the old philosophical center of the ancient world? Can't you see Duncan going there and looking at those graybeards in the eye and saying to them, haven't you heard the latest? Paul had a vision. Paul had a passion. Paul was delivered from the burden of religion. Paul was delivered from all of that striving after perfection, all of that load of guilt. Paul was released by grace in his encounter with Jesus Christ and that vision he had, and he wanted to tell the whole world about it. Duncan loved that about Paul. Duncan loved anybody that was passionate about something. Somebody that believed something and wanted to move the whole world. Good religion is not some anemic, non-controversial pablum fed to weak people who are afraid. Good religion is robust. It's full of passion. And it has an open mind to probe to the depths with all of the possibility and potential of human understanding. Why should we keep that alive? It would be a dereliction of our duty if we should allow that which we have had in our midst to fade from memory and fail ourselves and our larger community the opportunity of exposure to that beautiful, passionate, intelligent quest for God in that one. Drunk with God was the embodiment of a religion that makes the human divine.